Morning, everyone. So happy and pleased to see all of you here. Thank you for coming. Andrew Brust, Brian Randall, and myself are the co-chairs for this event. We've worked hard to put together a bunch of content with a lot of good speakers that I hope you enjoy and get a lot out of. My suggestion to you is that you take the opportunity whenever possible to talk to the speakers, either go up after a session, see them in the hallway, at lunch, at some of the other events. One of the criteria that we use when we pick speakers is that they're people that are willing and happy to talk to our audience and attendees, and they like to share their experience, but maybe even more importantly, I know for my part, I learn a lot talking to attendees at different events and hearing all of your experiences and what works and what doesn't in your world. And so make the most of this time by taking advantage of the speakers and, of course, your fellow attendees. I'd like to thank our event sponsors, obviously Microsoft. What a beautiful facility this is, isn't it? Isn't this nice? And, of course, the Visual Studio team. This is, after all, Visual Studio Live, and the Visual Studio team gives us a great deal of support in putting on this event. And our platinum sponsors are Microsoft Learning and Microfocus, and our gold sponsor is SmartBear. So all of these sponsors are important to the success of this event. If you see any sponsor-related folks at their booth or at any of the events, again, introduce yourself and take advantage of the opportunity to have a good conversation. With that said, I have the pleasure of introducing today's keynote. Her name is Amanda Silver. I've known Amanda for a long time. It's best usually to avoid, you know. But Amanda has been a great friend at a personal level, but perhaps more importantly, a great friend to the community. And I'm not going to get into her history. I think she's going to do that. But you'll see through her talk that an awful lot of the coolest technologies that all of us use and love or have over the years, Amanda has had a hand in. And it's just awesome. But I will tell you her title because it's kind of cool. She is now the Director of Program Management. Isn't that awesome? In Visual Studio, so she's building tools for Windows, Windows Phone, iOS, Android, and the Chakra JavaScript engine, as well as the TypeScript language. So she still owns half the cool stuff on the planet, right? Is this not awesome? So please welcome Amanda.
Hey, guys. Let's see. Is that the right one? Yes. Okay. So what I thought I'd do this morning is take a little bit of a different spin on things, and rather than just talk about the technologies that we're coming out with, I thought I would actually talk about Microsoft's Open Developer Platform kind of through the lens of my career. So I'm actually going to kind of walk you guys through what's happened to me since I joined Microsoft in 2001-ish, and all of the cool technologies that have been coming out and kind of our approach to openness and how it's changed over the years. But first, I'm going to start with kind of where we are today. I apologize, I have a little bit of a cold. Hopefully you guys can all hear me. Yes? Okay, great. Okay. Let's just move this thing. There we go. Okay, so first of all, I joined Microsoft in 2001 after graduating college because I was an undergraduate TA. And as an undergraduate teaching assistant, one of the things that I experienced was that there were a lot of kind of hostilities in terms of bringing new people into the industry. And I always felt like it was exciting to kind of see how many more people we could bring into the industry. And so throughout my career, I've found it really satisfying to work on developer tools, especially developer tools that we give away for free to 95% of the population that uses it, because it actually means that we're enabling other people to kind of get what their job is done, be that for a corporation or kind of a business, or if that's just for a nonprofit or a university or other things like that. So our mission with Visual Studio has really been to be the best-in-class tools that can be used by any developer, period. Now, the Visual Studio IDE is an immersive developer experience, as you guys all know, that's really supposed to be tailor-made for your development needs. And we've seen it really expand over the last couple of years. It now includes Xamarin, so tools for iOS, Android, and as well as Windows. And we've also added to the family the VS Code experience, which is a lightweight code editor for those who really want a code-focused experience. How many of you guys have used VS Code so far? Yes? Okay, great. And Visual Studio Team Services is a comprehensive suite of application lifecycle management tools that allow you to manage source control, bug tracking, you know, all of that kind of stuff. How many of you guys are using VSTS today? Cool. So a lot of you guys. Okay, great. Now, Visual Studio has had a tremendous amount of momentum over the last year. It's the most popular IDE in the world. It has over 2.9 million active monthly users, which is a pretty tremendous population of users. And in a lot of ways, what I think about when I think about kind of why we do openness with our technologies, it's really to build the user base of folks who are using that technology so that you have a larger community upon which you can draw upon so that you can actually make more progress more quickly with what you want to build. Visual Studio 2015 has seen 12.7 million downloads. I think we took this stat last month, so we've probably broken 13 million downloads since then. And VS Code has seen absolutely phenomenal adoption over the last, since it launched about a year ago. And it now accounts for about 10.3% of our overall user base, which is pretty tremendous. We have over 6,000 extensions in the Visual Studio Gallery and Marketplace. How many of you guys use extensions today? A lot of folks, okay, great. But the point is of the extensions is that no matter what you guys are building, it gives you the confidence that there's some extension out there and some other developer out there who's using that same technology, using Visual Studio to build the type of app that you want to build. And they actually have an extension that can make you a little bit more productive. We actually see about 950,000 extension downloads per month, so we definitely see that you guys are using them. The breadth and the reach with Visual Studio has actually continued to grow over the last year. And in July 2014, we had 1.45 million active monthly developers. And this year, we reached a total, including all of our product family, 3.1 million active monthly developers. And when you think about the total developer population of the world, that's actually a pretty sizable chunk of the developer population. Of that, about 1.5 million of them are C++ devs that use Visual Studio. And over 2 million of them are obviously .NET devs. So then the kind of remaining fraction is other programming language. So that's actually a tremendous amount of people. Now there's a lot of overlap there. So a lot of .NET devs also do C++ sometimes. How many of you guys do both? Few of you, okay, great. So what happened in the last year that actually kind of propelled that growth? We shipped 3 updates of Visual Studio 2015. We made VS Code GA, so that actually happened earlier this year around build. .NET Core RTM'd, so how many of you guys are using .NET Core so far? Okay, maybe 20 of you in the room, okay. Obviously, we acquired and integrated Xamarin, which I was a part of, and we unveiled the brand new marketplace for VS Code, Visual Studio, and the VSTS extensions. But our mission and our strategy is really to reach any developer building any app on any platform, and every company, we believe, is going to become a software company. Whether it's a bank that's evolving to enable their customers to use mobile apps to be more productive on the road, or somebody kind of tracking their supplier chain, or even on campus. We've certainly seen a lot of mobile apps out there that help students kind of find other students that have like interests, or even just find the dorm room that they need to get to, or whatever it is. So one of the things that we've done over the last year is we've really started to build out the breadth of different developer experiences that you can target from Visual Studio. So obviously we've done Windows development for many, many years, but over the last year we've added support to build C++ apps for Linux, for example. We've added the Xamarin support so that you can build iOS and Android apps. We've built the Node.js tools in Visual Studio so that you can build microservices using Node.js. Cordova, so that you can use HTML, JavaScript, and CSS to build mobile apps. How many of you guys have tried the Cordova tools? All right, a few of you. About as many that have used .NET Core so far. So with this, one of the things that has happened over the last release is that we've actually made the ability of the tool much, much, much stronger. And you can target so many more scenarios. The result is that the size of the installer has actually gotten kind of big. And so if you install everything, then it actually can take a long time. And you might be installing a lot of things that you don't necessarily need. So one of the things we've been working on is something called Project Willow, which is a new acquisition experience. So let me just show you guys that real quick. Hopefully I'm on the right one. Let's see. Come on. Yay, okay. So this new acquisition experience, well, hold on. Let me, rather than speaking to the slide, let me actually install Visual Studio while I'm speaking to the slide. So we'll just go ahead and open this installer. This is the new installer that you guys will be seeing in a couple of weeks. This is preview 4. So we haven't yet released this. I just got these bits yesterday. Got them patched by a dev yesterday. So we're going to really cross our fingers and hope that this works, okay? But while I'm speaking to this, I'm just going to go ahead and install it. And one of the things that you see here, now I made this a little bit shrunken to just to fit on the slide so you can see the left-hand side, but you see that we've added a whole bunch of more what we call workloads that basically support everything that you've kind of expected with Visual Studio. So you can be kind of, you can know exactly what you're getting as you install it. Now the core installer is just about 395 megabytes, so I'm going to go ahead and start installing that. So the base install, you know, we estimated would probably will end up about 350 megabytes. The average install time that we've seen in the wild for the base install is about 180 seconds. Now this machine here that I have is not a very powerful machine. I think we picked this up because one of the guys on my team, his laptop died, and we had to get a $200, $300 machine so that he could demo something. So that's what this thing is. But as you can see, if we go back to the acquisition experience, it's making good progress. Let's just go back here so you can see all of them. Now, the base installer has a very low impact. Used to be that Visual Studio actually installed stuff to your GAC, installed stuff to your registry. So this base installer is entirely isolated. In fact, I can even install this off of a thumb drive, and it works. It's totally transparent. So you guys know all of the components, including Microsoft components, as well as third-party components that are getting installed. And you guys can totally configure it. So we showed kind of like what are the top workloads that you need. Let's say you're targeting iOS, it gives you all of the SDK dependencies and things like that you need for that. But if you're targeting Android, you can actually get pretty far along without having like Ant or Gradle, for example. And so you can actually install those at a later point. So you can actually kind of really customize what you want with this. Now, what you'll see in a second, says 95%. It takes a little bit on those last few 90s. We're still getting out some bugs. But what you should see is that I can actually install it. I can actually run it in just a second. There we go. in about, you know, two and a half, 3 minutes, maybe 4 minutes on this not so good machine. So let's just go ahead and launch it. Now, what you'll see here is that this really hasn't been initialized at all. It's going to ask me for my settings again. It's going to ask me to sign in. I'm not going to do that now, so you guys don't have to suffer through that. This will take a minute, as it always does. But once it launches, what you basically get is everything that you would expect from kind of a core editor. So you don't get you still get the Solution Explorer and things like that to be able to explore your projects, but you don't get everything with respect to all of the designer features and other things like that that you expect from the big Visual Studio. But you have basically a core kind of text editor. So we're still working on the startup perf for this version. And again, this is a slow machine, but this will take just a second, and it should launch. All right, so now that looks like real Visual Studio to you guys, right? Yeah? Okay. So now let's go ahead and just open a folder. Let's open this Hikinator folder that I have on my desktop. And this basically has a whole bunch of surveys on how to write haikus in Go and Ruby and PHP that I found off of GitHub. So it's just going to open that up in the folder explorer, in the Solution Explorer. And what you can see here is that if I open up a Go file, I actually get colorization. And I will get a minimal amount of kind of grammatical and syntax-based IntelliSense and kind of auto-completion. We should get the same for my Ruby file. If you see up here, we scroll up, you can see that we're actually getting colorization. So we basically get the kind of core editing experience from that min installer, which means that you can be productive. We also include some minimal debugging capabilities in this min installer of Visual Studio, as well as you can see down below, I even have Git integration, you know, SCC integration kind of directly into Visual Studio, even with this min core installer. So the point here is that Visual Studio really can be, you can expand, it can target whatever programming language you want to target. And we've been working on this lightweight installer experience so that it's easier to get started than ever before. Now, I spoke about the fact that we've released multiple updates in the last year. One of the things that's really changed over the last couple of years is just how quickly our agility of Visual Studio is. We actually aim to update Visual Studio every quarter, and we've been pretty consistent about that. And in fact, we've also started to release what we call micro updates. So if we see via telemetry that there's crashes that are going on in the wild, for example, we will actually go and fix that within a matter of a couple of days of releasing it. So that's one of the reasons why you guys might see that there's an update available. Most of the time when you see that there's an update available in the notifications, that's because a SDK or something some type of programming that you're doing has a new SDK available, and we want to let you know that that's available and you want to target that. About once a quarter, those things are actually updates to Visual Studio, meaning that we fixed a whole bunch of bugs. We might have come out with a few new features. And then the micro updates, which really just do small bug fixes, but critical bug fixes, they happen kind of seamlessly. You guys don't actually necessarily need to be prompted for that. So we can actually fix these things every couple of days. Visual Studio Team Services also updates every single sprint, but because it's a service, this all happens kind of behind the scenes. You guys don't know that this is necessarily happening, but it's kind of constantly improving. And Visual Studio Code actually has a daily insider build. So if you're using it, you will actually, and you're on the insider build, which currently has the green icon, then you'll actually get a daily update of that. And we've had very frequent Sprintly releases as well. So I think you guys certainly think about Visual Studio as something that supports innovation, both in terms of pushing the limits of developer productivity, and I just spoke about agility. But what I'm going to focus on for the rest of the session is openness and kind of, as I mentioned earlier, how it relates to my career. So let's start way back in the day. This is a fuzzy photo. This might have been PDC 2003 or something like that, but this is me being interviewed by, it wasn't even Channel 9 in those days. I don't even know what it was called. I forgot what it was called. But that's Robert Scoble watching me. I think I was probably demoing generics in Visual Basic .NET. In that era. I worked on Visual Basic for many, many years, again, because I really wanted to kind of bring more people into the industry. Now, around this time, now you'll see that this is 2001. This is when we actually planned to share .NET. Not quite open source, we shared the source from .NET. So we made it available. And one of the things that you can see from this is that this is something that kind of still exists today. If I go to, let's see, source of .NET, you can see that I can actually go and look at all of the sources for .NET, which is really fun. How many of you guys have seen this before?
We don't see it.
Oh, you don't see it. Shoot, that's not good. That's important. Come on, switcher.
Now we see it.
There we go. Source of .NET. No? This is what the problem is. I have two multi-screens. Okay. There we go. There we go. So how many of you guys have used source of .NET before? Not very many of you. How many of you guys knew it existed? Not very many of you, wow. Okay, so one of the things that's really cool about this is that you can actually go and look at the entire .NET code base without having to enlist or anything like that. And you can see, for example, the sources that on, for example, string and why things exist the way that they do. So you could see, for example, we might not catch all overflows with this check since we could have wrapped around blah, 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 blah. There are notes in here around, hey, the security team thinks it's a really good idea that we do this thing here. So it's actually fascinating to just not only read all of the source code that goes into .NET, it really helps you debug, but it also kind of gives you some of the motivation for why .NET is the way that it is. But as I said, when we released this, it was, how do I put it, shared source. It was available. You could read it. We didn't include the GC. We didn't include JIT. Those are kind of important things. Now we actually include those things in our open source project. We didn't accept PRs. But this was basically Microsoft's openness as of the era that I started. Now, who recognizes that? Does anybody know what that is? What is that? That is Second Life, yes. In 2007, I think on Rocky's encouragement, I actually hosted a Second Life session on Link in Second Life. And I talked all about kind of what are we doing in Link, or maybe this was on Silverlight. I think it might have been Link in Silverlight. I can't remember exactly what it was. But yes, I was so cool that I wanted to appeal to new developers by appearing in Second Life. I think that's just an example of how misguided we can be in our careers at various points to appeal to folks. But one of the things that happened in my career, about 2008, I actually transferred into working on JavaScript for a while. And that really changed the way that I looked at technology. The reason for that is because Being involved in the web and kind of what happens with the web, it's not a single organization that is kind of setting the agenda for how the web evolves. And the competitors were moving very, very quickly. It kind of started with an open economy. And so that really changed the way that I looked at technology and how it kind of evolves. And about that time, I started working on the Chakra JavaScript engine. And the office team came to us and they said, hey, we need to move from the huge, you know, thick client Excel and Word and PowerPoint, and we need to move to Office 365. And the question was, how do we take a user base that has thousands of C# and C++ engineers and make them JavaScript developers, because this needs to be hosted in the browser? And so I started working with Anders on how we should approach that. And that's kind of where TypeScript came from. Now, one of the things that, you know, we thought when we first started working on TypeScript is, if we did this just for the Office team, and Office was the only people who actually used this technology, we're not doing Office any favors. Because basically, they are not going to stay current with how the web is evolving. And they can't kind of keep up. They won't necessarily know about the idiosyncrasies of the web. And so we decided that we had to release this as something that was public and open source. And we did it in a way that wasn't super Microsoft-centric. We actually released Sublime Text plugins, for example, when we released TypeScript for the first time. And what we've seen is that the community has actually been tremendously responsive. Now, originally, we launched this on CodePlex, which was Microsoft's open source software repository at the time. But over the years, we kind of learned that we needed to move this to GitHub. Now, this is the TypeScript site today. The idea is that TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript that allows you to get all of the benefits that you're used to from C# in terms of static time checking, IntelliSense, that kind of stuff, but with JavaScript. And now it's on GitHub. You can actually see, you can go look at the source now. We do all of the development in the open, so every issue, every feature, even our language design meeting notes actually get published there. You guys can kind of contribute ideas or issues or pull requests if you wanna, if you have a feature that you want to introduce. And as I said, the growth has been pretty phenomenal. When we released this, it was October 2012. And again, like, our goal was really just to get the Office team to use it. But we did it in an open way, hoping that other people would start to use it as well. And we've really seen it take off in the last year or so. So this is kind of the daily downloads from NPM, which is one of the most common ways that it gets released. Here you can see the downloads per month, and this is just from the 2015 era, so you can actually see that it's growing pretty phenomenally. And one of the things that's always really great to see in the community is when, you know, there's an outpouring of love for the work that you do. And last week, it's kind of one of those a few times in your career experiences that you actually get to see true appreciation for the work that you're doing, which was awesome. So let's go to the playground and actually look at TypeScript here. So as I said, it's something that allows you to get strong typing over JavaScript. So I can go ahead and write something like class. Oh, thank you. There you go. Class greeter. And this will actually write idiosyncratic JavaScript on the right-hand side. How many of you guys have seen TypeScript before? A few of you guys? Okay. So then I can just go ahead and say greeting, and I can make it a strong type, and I can go ahead and say, I can actually create constructor, and say message.string, and we can go ahead and say this.greeting, and you actually see that I get statement completion for this. Now, one of the things that we've done is we've not only made the language open source, but we've also made the language service open source. And it's the same language service that's powering this host playground, which we call the Monaco editor, that also powers VS Code. It also powers our Sublime Text extension. It also powers our Visual Studio extension as well. So it's all basically the same exact thing. So I can go ahead and return hello. And rather than typing all of this, I can just go ahead and you can see it here. And rather than saying, say hello, I can say, say hello VS Live, and I can go ahead and run this, and we can see that it says hello VS Live. Thank you very much. So if you haven't checked out TypeScript yet, go ahead and check it out. Here's an example of the GitHub repository for the Sublime Text plugin that uses that same language service. Now let's kind of move along, because I still have a lot to show you guys. We open sourced a good portion of ASP.NET and .NET kind of back in 2012, around the same era that we released TypeScript. And for this one, this is the first time that we actually allowed developers outside of Microsoft to submit patches and code contributions. Now, how many of you guys are doing actual open source development in your work? Not very many of you guys. One of the reasons why this actually takes quite a long time to kind of get approved through corporate processes is because you need to get the legal clearance and the IP clearance and all of the kind of, you know, there's actually a lot of overhead to managing open source. And so we had to do a lot of work to actually get TypeScript out there and .NET out there. Now, in 2014, we actually went a step further and open sourced the entire .NET platform, including the GC and the JIT for the first time, and worked on making it cross-platform. How many of you guys know that .NET is now open source? Okay, great, good. Good to hear that we're getting the message out there. But we expanded the entire full .NET stack. So that's great. And made it all available under the .NET Foundation. Now let's talk a little bit for a minute about kind of how we think about this. .NET Core hit RTM on June 27th, and we've defined a set of core assemblies, what we call the BCL, that we consider app model agnostic, which means that they run in all of these different contexts. And the goal for this is to make sure that they are 100% binding and source compatible. So you can actually write a library against the .NET standard, and that actually works across all of these different targets, the .NET framework, .NET Core, Xamarin, and eventually Unity, which is one of the things that we're working on right now. We'll talk a little bit more about .NET standard in just a second. Now, one of the things that I mentioned that we've also been working on is obviously the integration of Xamarin, and we're not yet done. James will be doing a session later this week. There's James on kind of a deep dive on Xamarin. Now, it's now included in every version of Visual Studio, including the community version, the pro version, and obviously the enterprise version. And so that means that you can actually build against iOS and Android. Now, one of the things that we did when we brought Xamarin into the family is we actually open sourced a whole lot more of the Xamarin platform. Xamarin was originally built on top of Rotor, which was a kind of version of .NET, but we actually took the portion of Xamarin that targets iOS and targets Android, and we actually made that open source very recently. Another thing that we made open source is the Xamarin Forms package, which is a cross-platform package that allows you to build apps that work across Windows, iOS, and Android. Let's see. Am I on the right one? Here we are. I think this is it. Okay. So this is just a Xamarin Forms package. I can go in and go File, New, Project, and what you can see here is I just created a portable Xamarin Forms package here. And with that, this is just a simple kind of hello world scenario, but we can go ahead and say, Welcome VS Live. You can see that I already did this a little bit earlier, but welcome VS Live, and I can go ahead and right click and deploy it. I'm going to deploy it locally to the Windows machine just for expediency's sake. And once that's done, I can go ahead and launch it on the local machine, and you'll actually see that we have Welcome VS Live. Now that code is written in XAML. It actually, that same code, that same app, will actually work across iOS, Android, and Windows without any modifications. Now that package that allows you to target all three of those platforms is actually open source. So if you guys don't like the way that that works, you could submit an issue, you could submit a PR, you could fork it and do whatever you wanted to, if you wanted to kind of make your own forms package as well. So now let's go back to this. Okay, so one of the things that I also kind of recently started picking up is NuGet. How many of you guys use NuGet? I'm assuming everybody in this room uses NuGet, or else you're at the wrong conference. One of the things I'm really excited to talk about today is that we've actually been working on revamping the documentation. NuGet, you know, everybody knows how to use NuGet, but very few people actually know how to create their own package and publish to NuGet. And so we've been trying to kind of make that easier, and we've also made the documentation available. We will be making the documentation available open source as well. So let's just jump to that. Wrong browser. Let's see. So this is a preview of our new NuGet docs that'll be coming out in the next couple of weeks. And one of the cool things about this is that I can go ahead and just edit it in GitHub. Oh, you guys can't see that yet. Thank you. This is the downfall of having multiple screens so that I can see my presentation. So this is the new documentation for .NET, NuGet. You can see that we've been working on kind of the most common guides and things like that. You can see build for .NET standard. I can go ahead and edit it in GitHub, and it's not showing right now because I'm not logged in, and this is a private repo right now. But you would be able to actually go ahead and edit it directly and kind of see that markdown. Now let's just jump to my other machine again. I think I have this right machine here. There we go. Let's stop this project and let's open VS Code. And what you see is this is an enlistment in those NuGet docs in VS Code. And I can go ahead and I can look at the guides and I can see that same build for .NET standard. Now this is using a plugin in VS Code that allows me to see both the HTML for the, or the markdown itself for the document, as well as a live rendering of it. So I can just go ahead and scroll down and, you know, change something here. There are two options. Let's make it three options. So now I can go ahead and scroll down and actually see what that looks like in my markup. I mean, that's how it renders, and then this is the actual markup here. But you can actually see that in VS Code. So now let's kind of jump back here. Is this the right one? Yes, okay. And NuGet has actually seen, and I think that this is kind of based on the momentum that .NET has had, a tremendous amount of growth over the last year as well, or the last couple of years. We actually reached the $1 billion download mark for NuGet, and we have over 55,000 unique packages in NuGet and over 600,000 total packages, and we've seen a 31% year-over-year growth in terms of packages being uploaded to NuGet. So when you think about open source communities, it's not just the fact that there is the source in the open, it's actually that there's also a flywheel of components that are available to target that open source platform, and NuGet really is that thing for .NET. So let's talk about VS Code for a second, as I just showed you guys. We've seen incredible momentum with VS Code. The project itself is open source. It's cross-platform, meaning that it goes to Windows, Linux, and OS X, or Mac OS, I guess they're calling it now. It's updated monthly, if not more frequently, and we've seen a tremendous number of new extensions for VS Code as well. I just showed you guys one. The first public release was in May of 2015, and we've had fairly regular updates since then. We did the beta and complete open source in November of 2015, and we hit 1.0 in April of 2016. It's entirely free, so anybody can go and use this for any purpose. And since we released it, we've actually seen 2 million installs since the public preview, and we support over 100 programming languages, and we've had over 300 pull requests contributed from the community. So that's just a tremendous amount of support for this text editor and momentum for this text editor that also has kind of lightweight debugging. For VS Code alone, it has about 1,000 extensions, even more than that, in the gallery right now. So, let's see, do I have the gallery open? Rather than, it doesn't look like, okay. Let's just switch back, just for time's sake. Okay, so as I mentioned, I started working on Chakra in 2009. Chakra is the JavaScript engine that supports Microsoft's Edge browser. We actually brought Chakra open source in January of this year. So now we have, it's really interesting to kind of contrast what it took to bring TypeScript open source. TypeScript in 2012, it's a transpiler down to JavaScript. I mean, really, it's a compiler. There's not a whole lot of risk that is represented from a security perspective or from a, you know, Microsoft IP perspective or anything like that. But it actually took a lot of work to get TypeScript to be available open source, but it was necessary for it to be received well by the community. Chakra, it was really interesting. We decided that we wanted to bring it open source last year around in the summertime, and 6 months later, it was ready. And we, you know, got approval all the way up to the muckety mucks, and the conversation was just very, very different. And so it really shows how much Microsoft has kind of changed with respect to open source over the past couple of years. In fact, just a couple of days ago, and I think it was 2 weeks ago, we announced that we actually have builds for Chakra Core, which is a core component of Windows. Right? This is the JavaScript engine that powers Edge. I mean, that is one of the most central components of Windows itself. We've actually ported to Linux and OS X as well. Now, why do we do this? The main reason is because when you think about Windows and where we want to take Windows, one of the main places we want to take Windows is into the IoT space, so that you can have very small device drivers or other small devices that are running Windows, full Windows, that work and are high powered. And if the Chakra engine isn't open sourced, then people can't kind of peer into that and see what's going on those IoT devices. So that's kind of why we did that. Now we've also submitted this Chakra core to the Node mainline. How many of you guys have used Node.js in the past? A few of you guys? Okay. About as many as who have used .NET Core. So with this, our goal is not necessarily to completely replace Node with Chakra underneath, but actually to make it so that on those IoT devices, you can kind of use the same assumptions around how Node works on those IoT devices when you're programming against JavaScript. And so kind of getting that to work. Now let me just show you guys one of the things that we introduced with this, which is time travel debugging for Chakra Core. So now I'm just gonna run back to this machine here, I think. Actually, it should be this machine. Okay, let's go here. Let's just close this. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is just change directory to TTD demo. Okay, great. And record.bat. And now it's actually recording. Now I can go to this and open HTTP 127338, which hopefully should work. Now, this is just a very simple JavaScript application that, kind of does a to-do MVC style thing. I can go ahead and click and see what are the average tasks that these people need to do. I can click on Sandeep and Sarah. These are all the people who actually work on this project, and Arunesh. And we can see that Arunesh actually has an undefined, and that's not quite what we wanted to see. So I see that I get a potentially bad value encountered in templating, and I get that infinity timestamp. Now, what I can do is go ahead and open VS Code. Now, this was already opened against this project, so it already knows kind of where to open up against. And I can go to the server and I can go ahead and look for that error message. And I can see that there's a potentially bad value encountered in templating. I can go ahead and set a breakpoint here. Now that app you just saw, I just terminated that, right? You guys noticed that I terminated that because it hit an undefined. But what I can actually do with this new Chakra Core version is I can go and debug it. And I can go ahead and debug it against that trace and hit play. And you'll see that it actually hits that breakpoint that I had just set. Now, how is that doing it? It's actually doing a complete trace when I run that record.bat, saving it, getting the telemetry against it. Now, the really cool thing here is that in addition to step over, step into, et cetera, I can actually go ahead and let's see. Step back in time. Now, those of you who have used IntelliTrace before in Visual Studio, it's kind of similar to this, but this is actually working against a JavaScript engine, a cross-platform JavaScript engine. I can go ahead and kind of step back up and see what's going on here. And what we can see here is that with this you can see that that has the value of 10, and this length, if I highlight it, has the value of 0, so I'm actually getting a divide by 0 situation here. But you can actually see that we have time travel debugging in this kind of Chakra Core engine, which really the bottom line is that we can actually bring all of this innovation that you would expect from the Visual Studio team and the Microsoft's developer division that really focuses on tools to developers no matter what they're targeting. So let's jump back to this. Okay, so the other thing that was a really exciting development in the last year is Ubuntu on Windows. How many of you guys heard about this? Now, a few of you guys. How many of you guys have ever done Linux or Unix programming before? Okay, well, when I was in college, I was actually a Unix admin. And so when I started at Microsoft, I had never used anything in the Visual Studio family. I had never done any Windows development at all. Visual Studio was a revelation to me because I had never seen any editor that had IntelliSense before. So that was pretty awesome. Let me just show you guys kind of how this works real quick. Let's jump to this one. Okay, so on the Windows Insider, not just the Windows Insider builds, this is the anniversary build that just RTM'd recently. I can actually bring up a bash shell, which is what I just did. I can go ahead and cd to that. I can go lsb release-a. And you can see that this is actually running the Ubuntu binaries that Canonical ships. And I can go ahead and hit ls. This is one of your most common things that you want to use in bash. I can go ahead and say ls-l, and I can see all of the ACLs that are on the different files and kind of binaries that are in that folder. I can actually do a quick ls/proc, And oops, ls-l/proc. There we go. And I can actually look at the process itself. I can go ahead and cat to whack proc whack CPU info. And you can actually see this is genuine Intel. Now, let's just clear this a little bit so you guys can see that. Now, one of the things I can do is go ahead and read elf-h. Oops. Look at the uname. And you can actually see that this is a real ELF binary running on the Linux subsystem in Windows. I'll talk about how this works in just a second. But can I see my C drive? That might be kind of one of the big questions that you guys have. I can go ahead and mount C and CD to users. And then I can go ahead and ls, and you actually see that this is my all of my users in my Windows C drive. And I can go ahead and cd dot dot, and I can cd into the samples directory, into the Sinatra demo master, and I can even run vi on a Ruby file. Let's open it, and you can actually see that that's the Ruby file working right there. So that's pretty cool. As a developer, if you're used to using the Bash shell, you can actually now use that in Windows. For open source communities, this is even more important because it means that all of the binaries that are often built against OS X and Linux actually will more than likely work against Windows for the first time ever without them having to do a major effort to kind of bring it over. And so that means that things like Ruby, things like Node, etc., don't need to be ported to target Cygwin or something else to actually work against Windows. So it means that you guys, as Visual Studio developers, as Windows developers, actually have the ability to use whatever programming languages or runtimes that you want to, which is pretty awesome, I think. Now, this is not a VM running in Windows. That's one thing that's really important. This is actually just a Linux subsystem. So what we've done is we've basically taken the Linux system calls and we've mapped them to the Windows kernel system calls. So it's not running in a VM. You don't get worse perf as a result. You get the perf that you should expect. But it just works. And so all of those binaries that you might want to use, just go ahead and work. Now, one of the other things that we really work on is making sure that you guys can build apps that are connected. If you think about a mobile application, every mobile application has some kind of connectivity. With the exception, even a game that you're, let's say, Cut the Rope, that you're using mostly on your little device, actually needs to connect to a leaderboard and other things like that. So every single app that you're writing in this kind of modern era is pretty much a connected app, and that's what Azure is about. Now, one of the things that we've really tried to make sure is that you guys can actually see entirely transparently how your apps actually are connecting to Azure. And so all of the SDKs for any programming language that you use to target Azure is actually available in open source as well. So you guys can actually see kind of how those things are being routed and even improve it over time. Excuse me. Now, one of the great ways to engage with us on all of these open source projects is via Gitter. And we have basically teams that are on there all the time. We also have kind of office hours, so you guys can go ahead and come in during those office hours and kind of talk to the teams during that time. But this is a client kind of like Slack that allows you to interact with the team directly if you have questions, rather than kind of waiting for to post to a forum and you wait, 2-3 days maybe before somebody actually responds. You can actually have an ongoing dialogue with these folks. Now, in addition to everything that I talked about, submitting PRs, submitting pull requests, issues, other things like that, there are other ways that you guys can interact with us and make our software better. In Visual Studio, we actually have a little glyph at the top right that allows you to report a problem or provide a suggestion. This is actually new as of, I think, update 2, 2015, and the most recent Visual Studio 15 previews. But you can also tweet to Visual Studio, and we respond and listen there as well. So we really want your feedback on an ongoing basis. Now, one of the things that you guys will see is that not only do you get to report that issue into us, but you actually get to see what other people have been reporting as well. So as you can see here, we have an example of, you know, edit and continue crashing on Visual Studio 2015 Update 2. And you can see that it had 11 votes. And rather than refiling the issue, all you need to do is just click Me Too. I'm experiencing that as well. And we'll reach out to you and try to get a repro and fix the issue. And these are actually issues that we fixed within a matter of a couple days. So this is just a quick, you know, a quick kind of pull from the TypeScript thread on Hacker News last week, but I thought it really kind of, you know, captures how I look at what I do at Microsoft. You know, what I try to do is to kind of empower all of you guys. And I don't think about it as an income or a job or anything like that. I think about it as basically the way that I have that impact. When I think about what you guys go out and do, in your jobs and how you guys are empowering your users, that's really what kind of gets me going. And so I think that was really a great quote from that thread last week. So what's coming? In Visual Studio 15, that lightweight installer that I just showed you guys that should be optimized for your needs, you do not need to install all of the workloads. In fact, please don't. The best experience is to just install what you need, and if you need to add Python at a later point, you can go back to that installer and add it. And we've really designed it so that it should just work for you guys. Any developer, any app, whether you guys are a .NET developer or you also work with, you know, Ruby developers or Go developers in your organizations, we want to make sure that the Visual Studio family actually works for your entire development team. We obviously want to continue to make sure that we have the most productive tooling in the industry. I didn't even get into all of the productivity enhancements we're adding to Visual Studio 15. You guys should definitely attend all of the sessions, attend James's session. Mark Wilson Thomas has a session tomorrow where he'll be talking about a whole bunch of editor improvements that are pretty exciting. And we always want to improve with your contributions and your feedback. So please, you know, if you're not comfortable contributing in GitHub or in submitting a pull request or an issue, all you need to do is just provide a suggestion by hitting on that little glyph at the top of Visual Studio. So, thank you guys. It's been an honor to be here. I hope you enjoy the rest of the session. Thanks.